All right. I appreciate the opportunity to come here tonight and teach. Anytime Jacob has me do it, I'm always really looking forward to it, and I enjoy doing it. So I'm really glad to be here. How about you guys? You guys glad to be here? You guys doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah? Good. That's good. So as Jacob said, we are going to be doing things a little bit differently. We're going to kind of intermingle our small group questions within points and of the sermon. And so we have this passage, and inside the passage we have three characters we're going to take a look at. The title of the lesson tonight is The Bigger Picture. And we're going to talk about how in those three characters' life, like what's going on in their life and how that compares to us in our lives and how we use that to look towards the bigger picture. The bigger picture is Jesus, right? We'll explain that a little bit more as we get into it, and you'll kind of see that. But for right now, I just ask that you pay attention to the Word of God. Let it speak to us as we read it. So starting in verse 14 of Mark chapter 9. And when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" And someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." And he answered them, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him, and when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, roaming, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood, and it has often cast him into fire and into water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us." And Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe, help my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse. So most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer." So let's take this time to pray. Lord, we thank you for your word. We thank you for how it speaks to us. Thank you for how it has spoken to me as I've been preparing. We just pray that you would open our minds, open our ears, and open our hearts to be receptive to what you have to say to us. Pray that you will not use my words tonight, but that the Holy Spirit will speak through me, speak what you have for us to hear. Pray that you will change our hearts. And we pray this in your name. Amen. So we're going to take the next couple minutes just to kind of review what's going on here, be clear on certain things that the passage is saying here, and then we're going to take a look at the three characters. The first character we're going to see is the father of the boy in the story. The second is the son, the one who is demon-possessed. And the third is going to be the disciples. So let's just kind of be clear on what's going on here. Like, what do we see happening? Verse 14, it says, and when they came to the disciples. Let's just be clear. Who's the they that's talking about? When they came to the disciples. Last week, Jacob talked about the transfiguration. And it says Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John up the mountain. So then the whole transfiguration thing happened last week. That's what Jacob talked about. And they've come back down the mountain, and they're kind of meeting up back with the disciples. And that's when they come across. That's the they it's talking about there. And that's when they come up, and they see that the disciples are kind of in this middle of this big crowd. And there's an angry crowd. They're angry, and Jesus is like, "What's going on here? Why are you guys angry? What's the problem?" And then a man stands up, and he's like, "Listen, Jesus, I brought my son to you. He's demon-possessed. I brought my son to your disciples, and they couldn't do anything about it. They couldn't help him." And Jesus, his response is, "You are a faithless generation. You guys have no faith whatsoever." And so then Jesus, he brings the boy to Jesus. Ultimately, we know the story, or ultimately we see that Jesus is able to cast out the demon, and he is, and the boy has new life now because of what Jesus has done for him. And we see the disciples, they pulled Jesus aside. They're like, Jesus, why couldn't we cast him out? What's going on there? And Jesus says, this demon can only be cast out by prayer. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more specifically when we talk about the disciples. So that's kind of what's going on here. This is the setting we're in. Didn't want to take very much time to look at that because we have a lot of other information with the characters that we wanted to discuss, and we don't have a ton of time to do it. So, first character is the Father. After we talk about him, we're going to have some small group discussions about his person. So let's look and see what kind of person this man is. Obviously, we just talked about how he's angry. He's brought his son to the disciples, and he's kind of mad. He's like, you know, he's probably heard about the disciples. He's heard about what Jesus has done and how they've cast out demons before. So he's like, I'm going to take my son to them. They're going to be able to cast him out, right? And he's kind of hopeful. He's like, maybe they can cast him. And then they're not able to. And then he gets mad. He's like, what's up with this? But then Jesus walks back on the scene. And he's like, well, his followers couldn't do it, but maybe Jesus himself can. So he's getting a little bit more hope. But at the same time, he's not fully trusting that Jesus can do it. He's kind of thinking, well, I don't want to get my hopes up because if he's not able to do it, then and he's kind of almost halfway hoping and trusting that Jesus is going to be able to cast out the demon. But he struggles with trusting. We see that he struggles to believe that Jesus is who he says he is. He struggles to trust Jesus. See, in his circumstance, his son, he has no control over his son. He has no ability to fix his son's problem. He has no ability to do anything about it. He's kind of helpless. And when I read this, it made me think, Justice, you're kind of like this guy in a lot of ways. There are a lot of things in my life that I have zero control over. Things in my life that are burdening me, like his son was burdening him. There's those things in my life that I have no control over, and I get angry whenever they are not fixed. When my problems are still there, I get upset and I get angry at God, and I start to doubt if he's actually going to help me or not, and I kind of come to him halfway believing like this man did. So we see here in verse, which verse is it? He says, hold on, went back up pages. All right. Jesus, the man comes to Jesus. He brings his son. He brings his burden. And he says, but Jesus, if you can do anything, if you have the ability, if you can do anything, have compassion on us. That's in verse 22. Have compassion on us and help us if you can. I'm like that in so many ways where I come to Jesus and I say, I don't know if you can, Jesus. I don't know if you have the ability to, but if you can, heal my problem. If you can. And what does Jesus say to me? And what does he say to the man in this story? Verse 23, and Jesus said to him, Jesus says to me, if you can? If you can? What do you mean, if I can? He says, all things are possible to the one who believes. See, my circumstance and this man's circumstance aren't exactly the same, but we have the same root issue, and it's trusting. We don't trust like we should. We don't believe that God and Jesus is watching over our circumstances and that he's going to help us. We don't fully trust him. And that's the root issue there. And I'm sure that maybe you guys can kind of relate to that as well, where you struggle to trust Jesus. For example, have you ever lost something? Have you ever lost a loved one? Have you ever lost your best friend? Maybe some sort of relationship failed. You ever had that happen in your life? And it hurts. You're struggling. But you have no control over it. You can't fix the issue on your own. But it hurts, and we bring them to Jesus not knowing whether or not he can fix them, and he says, I can. Don't ask me if I can, because I can. If you trust me, if you live for me, if you believe me and take me at my word, I will heal your circumstance. Whenever I'm going through stuff and I'm losing things and I'm like, Jesus, what are you doing in my life? He comes to me, he says, Justice, why are you being so faithless? Like, you can't be so angry at me. And you can't be mad at me, blaming me for what I'm doing in your life when you don't even know what I'm doing in your life. Who said that that best friend isn't going to come back around? Who said that I'm not going to heal your sick grandma? Who said that I'm not going to fix all of this? Because maybe I will. Maybe this is just a time in your life where I need to get you alone with me. Maybe this is just a time in your life where you need to focus on me. Maybe you need to hurt for a little while. Maybe you need to rely on me. Maybe you took that loved one for granted that's sick. Maybe I'm teaching you that you need to treasure every moment you have with them. Maybe I want you to be thankful for every breath that you take. We don't know what God's doing in our lives, but he's saying, you don't know. Don't be so faithless to be angry at me because of what I'm doing in your life. You don't know what I'm doing. I might bring it back. But I might not. What are you going to do if I don't? What are you going to do if I don't heal your circumstance? What are you going to do if you lose it for good? Are you going to be mad at me? Are you going to be angry at me? Are you going to trust me? What are you going to do about it? I think we use verses like verse 23. Look at that. He says, if you can, all things are possible for the one who believes. I think sometimes we use that verse and say, well, if I trust Jesus, if I believe that he's going to, then he'll do it. Like, right? If I believe that he's going to heal my grandma, then he definitely will. Like he's saying he's going to, right? If I believe that he'll give me a Ferrari, I'll get a Ferrari. That's not really how that works. We can't decide to trust in Jesus and believe in him so that we can get what we want. That's not the purpose of trusting in Jesus. And it's not, ultimately, that's not what trusting is. Trusting in Jesus is realizing that even though he might give it to you, he also might not. And you're trusting him that whatever he does with your life and that whatever he has for you in the future, it's better than what you want in the circumstance. You have to realize and trust that if he's taking this thing out of your life, maybe a good thing, like your grandma. Your grandma's a great gift from God. But like, if he takes that, he's going to do something great in your life through it. And you have to see that. You have to trust and believe that he will. And he might not bring back the friendship or the relationship, but ultimately he's got something better for you. And the Bible points us to that, to believe that he has better for you. Like while you're over here sitting pouting in a corner about what you don't have and what you can't have in the moment, Jesus is over here creating a masterpiece of your life. He's like, child, look at what I got over here for you. Look at this big old picture of your life. This is one moment in your life that you're looking at, and you're too busy over here sitting and pouting about it when I've got all this. You need to look towards this and stop looking at what the little moment in your life that you think you want or you think you need. Because Jesus is saying, I got it taken care of. Just trust me and live for me and trust me and I will take care of it. I think this is where you have to be careful too, though, because sometimes we still fall into thinking that because he said that all things are possible for one who believes, because he said that, we're like, okay, well, I don't have to trust that he's going to give me back this specific thing. I can just trust that he'll do something else great in my life and he'll replace it with something better, which he might. But you also have to realize that he may not give you anything at all. Like, what happens if you don't have anything this side of heaven? What if all you have is Jesus? What if he doesn't fix your circumstance whatsoever? What happens if you don't have the career you wanted, the family you wanted, the husband or wife you wanted, the kids you wanted, the house you wanted? What if you don't have any of it? What if you're alone? What if you don't have friends and all you have is Jesus? Are you going to complain about it? Are you going to be bitter about it? See, we have to realize that when we're trusting Jesus, it's not just to get what we want. Trusting Jesus is realizing that he is what we want. It's realizing that in the end, if you have nothing but Jesus, you have everything. It's difficult. It's difficult to trust God in these circumstances. It's difficult to hand over your life and what you want for your life. Because naturally, I got a lot of things that I want right now. I'll tell you that right now. There's a lot of things that I wish I had right now. It's difficult handing that to God and saying, this is what I want for my life, but I trust that what you have is better, even if it's nothing but you, because you are the goal. You are what I need. You are what I want. And I think it's also important to remember that trusting isn't a one-time decision. I think we often fall into thinking that if we trust Jesus and decide to follow him, we say yes to Jesus and we become a Christian, like we kind of leave it at that. You know what I'm saying? But I've kind of learned recently, especially, that I got to learn to trust Jesus every single day. I got to trust him multiple times a day, because if I don't, I always fall back into, well, I can do this and I can fix this and I can do this. And he's saying, no, continually trust me, continually rely on me. This isn't something that you do when you become a Christian. It's something that you do every day. Trusting Jesus is a lifestyle. It's a way that you choose to live, believing constantly that what he's doing in your life is better than what you have for yourself. This is kind of what, and I think it's also important to look at the example that the Father has in the story, how he responds when Jesus says, you're faithless. He says, what's wrong with you? Of course I can do it. All things are possible. And it says in verse 24, immediately the father of the child cried out and said, I believe, help my unbelief. It's kind of a profound statement there. He's saying, I believe, Jesus. I believe in the best human possible way that I can. Help the part of me that is prone to trust myself more than you. Help the part of me that thinks I got it figured out. Help the part of me that thinks I know what's best for my life. Help my unbelief. Because it's easy to fall into unbelief. Acknowledge that your trusting abilities just straight up stink. You're not good at trusting. I'm not good at trusting. You're telling me you're good at trusting Jesus, you're lying to me, because you're not. There's moments where we do and we follow Jesus, but there's also moments where we don't. Acknowledge that to Jesus. Say, help my unbelief. Acknowledge that. This is kind of what God has taught me as I was looking over this first character here, this man, because in a while he is terrible at believing God, so am I. In different ways, he's terrible at trusting that he's going to do what's best with his son, and I'm just terrible at trusting that he's going to do what's best with my life. Maybe you guys can relate to that. That's how God has kind of spoke to me through this character. He's kind of taught me, say, you got to trust me no matter what. Make the best of the struggle. If I put you in this circumstance, you make the best of it. You decide to live for me and praise me no matter what I do, no matter what. Pursue him, because in the end, he's all you got anyway. In the end, if he's all you got, that's all you need. Surrender to him daily, Justice Fagley. Constantly surrender your life and your own desires. Say, this is what I want, but what you have is better. And when he blesses you, be thankful for it, because you don't deserve it. You don't need it. You don't have to have it. Be thankful. Even the little things. What I've learned is I just need to stop getting so caught up in the moment. I need to stop thinking about what I think is right now and what I think I need now. Stop getting so caught up in that and look to the bigger picture. Look to the bigger picture of your life that God has created for you. Look towards the bigger picture, which is Jesus. Focus on him and trust Jesus. We should probably go ahead and move on to the second character because we're running low on time. We've got a lot here. All right. So these characters are going to kind of seem random. Like they have different lives and different issues, but at the end we'll kind of tie them all together and see how the issue is still the same and bring it all back to the same point. But we'll take a look for now at the second character, which is the boy. The boy who is demon-possessed. So what do we see? What kind of information do we see about him? Okay. He has, obviously, he's possessed. He's got a spirit that causes him to be mute. He has a spirit that seizes him. It throws him on the ground. He convulses. And also we see that, what verse says, that it often casts him into fire and to water, verse 22, trying to destroy him. So it's a pretty vicious demon that this boy's dealing with. It would kind of be terrible if you were in his shoes. You know what I'm saying? Like, that would be awful. Pretty big deal in his life. Obviously, this demon, it has consumed him. The father says that he's had it since childhood. So his whole life, he's just been consumed and controlled by this demon constantly. And it's always trying to destroy him. Like, that would be a horrible life to live. But when I read about him and about this thing that controls him, this boy, his picture, his life is a picture of the gospel. And so it's really cool to look and compare that to our lives, because when we look at our lives, there's things in our lives that control us, things in our life that have since childhood, our demons in a sense, are the things that ultimately we put before Jesus, things that we serve rather than him. So what can some of these things be? It's our nature, as we know, to serve ourselves, to serve these things, to serve anything but Jesus. It's not our nature to follow him and follow his commands. So does anybody have any thoughts of something that might be in your life that might take your focus off of Jesus or control your life? Anybody have any examples of what that could look like? Cell phone. Very true. Your cell phone can control you. Money. Money drives a lot of people, doesn't it? Money controls everything, anything and everything, right? Anything can control our lives. And I'd like to point out that when we look at some of these things that we have in our lives, things that control us, they are not necessarily considered to be demons. We have to sit back and think about them, because they're good things. and they are almost accepted in our culture. These demons are accepted and maybe even expected. See, what about like your education? Is your education most important at this stage in your life? If it is, like, that's kind of an expected thing, right? Like, even the church expects you to make that your priority. It's accepted that it is your priority. It's accepted that your cell phone is your priority at this age. And so we don't see them for what they are when we look at them like that. Like, we don't see the danger in them. But when we look at this boy, what kind of danger was he in because of his demon? His demon was throwing him into fire, trying to burn him to death. That's dangerous, right? He's throwing him into water, trying to kill him. And I'd like to point out, is this not the same thing that our demons do to us? We don't necessarily see it. We don't see the red flags. We don't see the danger signs that say, this thing in your life that's controlling you is destroying you. We don't always see that. Think back to Adam and Eve. You remember them? God gave them one command and said, don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He said, on the day that you do, you shall surely die. But Adam and Eve, in their pride, what did they do? The serpent tricked them. He said, if you eat this fruit, you're going to be wise. You're going to be like God. You want that, right? And she said, yeah, that sounds pretty good to me. Adam said, yeah, I like that. And so they lifted themselves up and said, what I want, my wisdom, me being like God, like that's more important than following God's command. They lifted that up. They lifted up themselves above God. And because of it, they were cast out. And God said, you will surely die. But, we're all inside of this as their inheritance, as their offspring. Like, we are all born into this same nature, into this same world where we desire ourselves and all these other things before we want Jesus. And so, but what did we see that Jesus did? What did he do? Let's look to Romans chapter 5, verse 19. You don't have to turn there, but I'll just read it. It says, for as by one man's disobedience, that would be Adam, for as by one man's disobedience, the many were made sinners. So by the one man's obedience, that would be Jesus. By the one man's obedience, the many will be made righteous. Because of Jesus' obedience, his obedient life, and his obedience to the point of death on a cross, because of that, we no longer are in the same danger that we were. Because our demons, like this demon, this boy's demon, throwing him into fire to burn him, trying to kill him. Our demons without Jesus will throw us into the fire, into the eternal fire. But Jesus, who lived that obedient life, because of him, we no longer have to live under the demons. And that's what Jesus does in this boy. He stepped in to his life. He said, you're controlled by this, and this has consumed your life. It was as if the boy was dead. Like, he had no life in him because of his demon. Life wasn't there. But Jesus stepped into his life, and he cast out the demon. He said, no, you're not going to have this power over this child anymore. This is not your place to be. I'm casting you out, and you may never enter him again. This is my child. I'm giving him life. And Jesus does the same thing to us when he steps into your life. You stepped into the world when you were born. You were in Adam. But when Jesus steps into your life, he says, nuh-uh, that's not for my child. He's not going to live for those things anymore. He is living for me. He has a new heart with new desires, things, and his heart beats for me now. So we see here in this passage that this boy, he was obviously different. There was some clear difference in his life because of what Jesus did in his life. He went from being controlled, from almost being dead, to actually living, and it was obvious to everyone around us. So, it's obvious that when Jesus steps in, there's a difference. But what Jesus asked me when I read this, and what I think he asked us, is how come I stepped into your life? How come you're not different? Why isn't it obvious that you went from death to life? Because still, after we say yes to Jesus, or after he comes into our life, we often still put these other things in front of Jesus. This is the age which the world and our culture tells us, like, it's about you right now. You can focus on your education. You can focus on going out and having fun because you're young. You don't have any responsibilities. And it's okay. It's accepted that we live that way. But Jesus is saying, no, that's not how you live if I have come into your life. If I am in your life, you are different. We don't always seem different, though. Why not? We think we can get right with God later. We can focus on Him later. This is the time for me. But what does that say about the God that you're claiming? If your relationship with your friends is more important than your relationship with Jesus, what is it saying about Jesus and His power in your life? What are you saying about it? What are you saying about the gospel if your friendships are more important than your relationship with Jesus? You're saying, it doesn't matter, it's not important, and it's not life-changing. I can be who I am. And when other people look at that, why do they need the gospel? What's the purpose of it? It doesn't have a purpose. The gospel changes lives. And if your life is not changed, you have to really think that over and say, why am I not different? When I read this, God said, Justice, you've got to be different. Sometimes you're not different. He says, you're going to either have to start, you're going to have to see my value. You're going to have to see what you have in me, and you're going to have to start living for me, or you're going to have to get out of the way. Because you're defaming my name when you say you have Jesus, but you're over here living for yourself, and you're living for these things now. You're living for your education. It's not a bad thing. You're living for your friends, your family, whatever it is. They're not bad things, but if you're living for those, you're defaming Jesus' name. You're saying His gospel has no effect in my life, and it doesn't matter. You can't do that. He's saying, Justice, follow me and let me be your goal, or you're going to have to get out of the way. Don't let your age be an excuse for spiritual laziness, because oftentimes we let that happen. We say, well, I'm so young, and I have only been a Christian for so long, so I can get away with these things. And oftentimes we let each other get away with these things because it's just not a big deal. It's normal. It's accepted to put other things before Jesus. But don't let that be your excuse, because it doesn't matter if you're 7 or if you're 70. Jesus' life, when He steps into your life, you're different. It doesn't matter what age you are. I'm not saying you're going to be perfect. I'm not saying you're not going to struggle with things, because these things are going to creep back into our lives. They are going to come back in. They are going to try to take control of our lives again. But so you are going to struggle with it, but you'll be different. What are you going to do when the demons start creeping back in? What are you going to do? Like we talked about earlier, you have to constantly trust Jesus, constantly remember what you have in Him, constantly bring your demons to Jesus' feet, say, this is not for me anymore. Constantly surrender your life to Jesus. Surrendering is a lifestyle. Remember who you are in Jesus. The process of surrendering can be painful, honestly. Look at what happened with this boy when Jesus cast out the demon. He says, you mute and deaf spirit, I command you to come out of him and never enter him again. Verse 26. And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he is dead. This is the truth with us as well. When Jesus calls out your demons, it's going to come wallowing out, and you're going to be on the ground foaming at the mouth. You know what I'm saying? It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. It's not going to be easy. And when people walk by and they see you, they're going to be like, this boy is dead. He ain't got no life in him. And Jesus, what do we see? What does the passage say that he does? But Jesus, verse 27, took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. Jesus, he comes to you in that. He says, I know you're hurting, and I know this isn't easy, but this isn't you. This is not how you're going to live. You're my child, so get up and walk with me. Live for me. You're not staying on the ground. You're not looking dead, because you're not. I have new life in you, and I get it. I get that it's painful. But Jesus will carry you through it. He'll come back, and he'll pick you up, and he'll say, walk with me. Don't push off walking with Jesus in this time. Like we said, this is a time where we think we can push off Jesus because we think we have time, and we think we need to focus on other things that are good things. But if that is your focus, you've got it all wrong. Trust in Jesus and live for him now. Don't push him off. It's time for us to step up. It's time for our youth group to say, this is not how we're going to live life. We're going to live to Christ's calling. We're going to be different because of the gospel. It's time to step up and focus on Him. Look towards the bigger picture of your life and stop looking at the moment and what you think you want right now. Okay, so we'll just briefly say something about the disciples. Ultimately, their issue is they thought they had something special to offer. We see that they couldn't cast out the demon. They didn't have the power. They weren't able to. And they asked Jesus, why can't we do this? Why weren't we able to? And Jesus says, you can only cast these out by prayer. See, they've probably done this stuff before where they said, they've cast out demons. They're like, we know what we're doing. We got something special, so let's go out without Jesus and we can cast out this demon. And Jesus said, you can't go in your own power. It's through prayer and recognizing that you don't have something special. It's the power of God that casts out demons. So there's a lot more to say, but since we're out of time, that's what you'll get for the disciples. We'll just wrap up with these questions. What do you most identify with? Are you like the dad seeking to control everything, doubting God, son controlled by demons, not Jesus, or the disciples prideful and prayerless? So which are you like? Which do you most identify with?